Thank you, Dylan, and thank you everyone for coming out. I just flew in from Montreal yesterday, so I'm a little discombobulated. I just launched my book there this past week. So I'm really thrilled to be able to share this book here with you guys tonight. I do quite a bit of traveling, and a few years ago I commuted between New Haven, Connecticut, and New York several times a week to complete my MFA, and I found myself staying at hotels, questionable guest houses, friends' couches, and so this first poem is born from that. From my nomadic lifestyle, I guess, and so are many of the other poems in this collection. All hotel rooms are alike. The dull haze when you turn on the only working bedside lamp reminds you of something distant you can't quite put your finger on. A memory of your childhood when you felt a guilty knot in your stomach for teasing the funny-sounding foreign guy when it was really just an episode of that 70s show. Or was it Perfect Strangers? When late-night Ab Master, Ginsu Knives, and Chia Pet infomercials begin to lose your attention, you like to call the front desk for amenities, Lilliputian shampoo bottles, mint-scented body wash. Not because you forgot yours. You have a suitcase full. But to reassure yourself that someone out there, other than your mother, cares about your hygiene. You wait for housekeeping so you can take them on the grand tour, proudly demonstrating the improvements now that you've constructed a Zen garden out of bedsheets and feng shui'd the furniture. You request an early morning wake-up call just so you may mumble, "Good morning, I love you." Only when you reach into the hallway for a strange newspaper do German backpackers make you realize the foreign air is very cold. This poem is titled Road Trip, and it's after Mary Ruffel. I think her poem is called Almanac. January, it will be different. February will draw you to a cave. In March, you will leave the cave, somehow changed. In April, you will speak, and the North Star will respond, a little too eagerly. May, spent among the tumbleweeds. In June, you will eat nothing but freshly mowed grass. In July, you will bake cookies on the dashboard of a Volkswagen Beetle. August will be filled with breathtaking vistas. A lunar eclipse will drive the Earth's population mad in September. October, a therapeutic trip to the state. In November, the madness returns, this time for good. December, all the roads are open. Comes after a painting by Henri Rousseau called Le Rêve that I used to go and visit quite frequently at the MoMA in Manhattan, and I find myself just entranced by it. I wish I had a picture of it. It's quite striking that there's, I guess, a new woman in the middle, a bunch of other animals throughout the jungle, and it was always interesting because Rousseau had never traveled, I guess, outside of Paris, really, and would go to the Jardin des Plantes and would just get all his painting ideas from there. So this poem is called Henri Rousseau's Le Rêve. You see a jungle where a woman reclines naked on a sofa. Two lions peer out from the undergrowth. Their eyes plump like frog eggs. One lion says, "Who's the babe?" The other one, "Mind your manners and don't stare, Fred." An elephant overhears the fuss and takes a peek too. Soon they're joined by a couple of birds, some noisy monkeys, and a snake, who was just passing by and completely missed the whole spectacle. Which was, I guess, a good thing, since he's a bit of a prude. What do these symbols, or what do these images symbolize? Love. Inevitability of death. Animals are peeping toms. That old song and dance. Oh, and the musician in the shadows wearing a rainbow-colored skirt. That's me. I don't really play the flute, but I do play a mean ukulele. I think this poem was appropriate because it's somewhat set in a bar, and, well, thank you, Cart. Autopilot. Sometimes I feel sad, or rather I feel unwell, without really knowing why. But knowing you are out there listening to me makes me feel like dancing. Not the type of dancing you do when you're in a bar and everyone around you is dancing to music you don't really like. But they seem to be having a good time, and you don't want to want them to think you're not enjoying yourself. Like that sad guy over there in the corner, who looks like he was a sea captain, who lost both his crew and his ship to a giant squid, but still wants to go back out to sea so he can avenge their deaths, but who is now terrified of the ocean, and will not step foot outside when it rains, or bathe, or even have a mouthful of soup. No, you certainly don't want to look like Killjoy McGee. So, you dance a little more eagerly, and although you're a little stiff, that's okay. Because you're trying to do the robot, and your moves are supposed to look stiff. You don't win any prizes, but people respect your effort and enthusiasm. Some of them even pat you on the back, slap you a couple of high fives, and ask you where you acquired your skills, prompting you to answer, amid some heavy breathing from all the exercise, that you're an autodidact. They mishear you and think you said autopilot, and so some of them smile and nod politely, but many of them aren't as forgiving, and they blow you off because they think you're a tool. But you're cool with that, because people who judge others that quickly aren't the type of friends you're interested in having as friends. Knowing you are out there listening to me makes me feel like dancing. Not in the way I just described, but in a way that is very close to the way I just described. The Window, after Stuart Ross. I approach the window. The window yawns and approaches the doorknob. The doorknob has a hangover. The doorknob approaches the front door. The front door is anxious about stock quotes. The front door approaches the New York Times. The New York Times is worried you know who won't call like she promised. The New York Times approaches the front lawn. The front lawn has a sore back, is considering yoga. The front lawn approaches fuzzy caterpillars that seek to understand the world. The caterpillars approach the apple tree, and the apple tree ponders religion. The apple tree approaches the sprinkler. The sprinkler dreams of being a fish. What does it mean? The sprinkler approaches the mailbox. The mailbox doesn't remember its dreams. The mailbox approaches the sidewalk. The sidewalk needs a new shrink. The sidewalk approaches the curb. The curb yearns for une petite Madeleine. The curb approaches the street. The street remembers to look both ways before crossing itself. And I think I'll end with one last poem here. And I guess I'll read from the last section of the book, where in which the emperor appears. And the emperor is somewhat of a tortured soul who rules over this post-apocalyptic empire. It is called The Emperor's Insomnia. The emperor can be found roaming his beloved palace gardens, through the pavilions, the hedge mazes, and atop the man-made mountains. Sometimes the emperor stands peacefully by his window for hours, gazing beyond his palace walls at the gray moonscape in the distance. At dawn, when the tiny figures of villagers emerge, which to him all look like flies on a windowsill, the emperor feels a seismic rage erupt within him. Every morning, he has a giant pearl crushed into his juice to accompany his breakfast of poached ostrich eggs on toast. Only after this meal can the emperor safely get through the day without feeling as if he is caught in a Venus flytrap closing its teeth. But the buzzing outside is becoming more ferocious, and those tranquil days are growing few and far between. Thank you.